You're listening to Tempest in a Stockpot. I'm Christine Bruce.
And I'm Brenda Barrett.
And together we're agitating for change in Northern BC. In this episode, which we've entitled A Lesson in Inclusion, I'll be visiting the tiny village of Wet'suwet'en and Angie Gagnon, the food security coordinator for this Wet'suwet'en community. In the first half of this episode, we want to consider the question, who do we shelter? After the break, Angie will take us on a tour of the grounds, where she answers that question. The entire village is invited regularly to clear, plant seeds, and harvest. Here in these mountains, the indisputable need everyone has to eat is gently addressed by inviting the entire community to participate in the whole process of planting, tending, harvesting, and celebrating local food. Now, it's time to check the pot and see what's cooking. Northern BC is dominated by mountain ranges. When most people think of Western Canada, they think of the Canadian Rockies. But to be more specific, we live in the Coast Mountains, in the Cassiar Mountains, and in the Columbia Mountains. Mountains rise abruptly on the landscape, with steep slopes and peaks, and a considerable elevation. They're not a subtle feature, and they affect both our ecosystems and our human activity, from providing drinking water to influencing tourism. To live in these mountains brings a sense of steadiness, reliability, and comfort. The first time Brenda invited me into her home, I commented that her front window features a spectacular view up the mountain Stekjoden. Brenda, normally a pragmatic person, immediately launched into a really poetic description of how this view was a major selling point in her decision to buy her house. Mountains are impossible to ignore. What if we use them as a reminder that even the smallest, most innocent features also deserve to be acknowledged and included? The work Angie Gagnon's been doing on behalf of the village of Wet'suwet'en and the ways she ensures that everyone gets involved in the matter of growing and producing healthy local food is simply astonishing. Angie and I shared a companionable half hour discussing her work in the Wet'suwet'en Hydroponics Building during a driving rainstorm that will sometimes challenge the sound quality. Then, Angie will take us on a tour of the grounds. When I worked in Wet'suwet'en, I planted a modest orchard, which we affectionately called the Edible Forest. Angie has built a small food dynasty so she can feed her entire community. And not only is Wet'suwet'en feeding its own members, it's growing enough leafy green vegetables that it can sell some in Smithers. One of my favorite errands into town has become a trip to the store out of hand for a bag of Wet'suwet'en's fresh lettuce or kale, particularly in the winter months. If you think about it, it's one of those success stories that the early colonizers would never have seen coming.
I'm applying for grant money to get a commercial fridge, something a little bigger. So once we get that, that'll be a lot better because these do not accommodate. If we were growing full capacity, little things can't support it. Because if you look in the other fridge, you can go ahead. We harvest these really big bags and we got to chill them right away.
Oh, right.
And then we harvest after they've chilled overnight. And that's why our greens stay fresh so long. Is that they get quickly chilled within 20 minutes of harvesting, and it does something to them to give them a longer shelf life in the fridge.
You're right, they do have a longer shelf life.
Yeah.
They are some of the best greens I've ever eaten.
I can't buy grocery store greens anymore because our greens taste so good. I think the success of this is having a dedicated person who can just do this. If you don't have that, then it's just not. Like when I started doing the elementary school, it was really difficult because I was an EA and I had all these other duties. But as it started to grow, they gave me some slots of time where I could commit myself to looking after some of the stuff in the garden. Because gardening requires daily attention. You can't just, one day I'm gardening and then a week later I'll garden. You kind of have to tend to it every day. So someone does need to be the actual person. Because then they can just watch over things and give people tasks or remind people of things.
Do you also find that there's a big educational level with this? Like I would have the kids coming over from the school and they were very tentative. Is it okay if we pick some berries? Of course, that's why it's here.
Yeah, and also, just being out there, right? Just you're working and all of a sudden the kids see you and they come running over and they're like, ah! And then you can just like very organically be like, oh yeah, just eat some berries, and like you can just build that hype, right?
Yeah.
And now we have someone else up at the school, Rob Silver. He's doing the gardening piece that I used to be doing up there, and he's great. He gets their excitement up. He brings them down here, and he's a teacher, so he can fill in those pieces of having it be within the curriculum too.
If they can normalize having all these facilities on site, they don't have to drive all the way into town to go to the Safeway. If you normalize that, think of the difference that's going to make. I mean, that's what I think Indigenous people, this takes them almost back to the original traditions.
My grandparents' generation all had gardens. And within these last couple generations, it just stopped. But people still like had these memories. And when we were out in the field yesterday, people's memories really started popping up, and people started talking. And people have been doing it like with all of the garden projects. We hear amazing stories, and you used to hear amazing stories too.
So. Yeah, it's lovely. It's really seeing their faces while they're telling the stories. It's not an insignificant thing that has happened just now. What does food sovereignty mean in Whitsett?
We do have a community food plan that was done, and there was a bunch of surveys that kind of went around. And I guess I wouldn't be able to answer it for everybody, but if you look at the mural that was created, I think our food sovereignty plan kind of got encompassed there, which is just, it's togetherness. It's doing it as a community, like we did it in the garden last night. Like, last night was totally last minute. It was like 6 o'clock. We made a couple posts, called a couple people, and we had a crew, and we were planting hundreds of pounds of potatoes last night. So it's like our community can really pull together. I think we're such an awesome community.
I think you are an awesome community.
Yeah.
This community generally is not capitalist in focus. And I think that's a terrific role model for other communities. When I see this happening, where you say, here, come in, get some food and make a donation if you want to. That's not capitalist at all, right? You're not here to make money. You're here to feed the community.
Yeah. When colonization happened, there was like everything was taken and the abundance was gone. So like I think everybody should feel like they have access to food and it doesn't have to be a struggle. Like, I don't think having good healthy food for anybody should be like a struggle. There is a lot of poverty in our community and grocery stores are far away, and I just like people shouldn't have to struggle to have access to healthy food.
And I'm delighted that it's lettuce that you're giving people.
Yeah, people are starting to get creative. Like, there's a lot of amazing chefs in our community, and they're spreading the word about how to use all these greens. And Evangeline Alford, she's one of our caterers in the community. She's making homemade salad dressing kits. She's putting recipes in there, and people are loving it. Like, just loving it. There's a lot of ideas that people come up to me and tell me they're making wraps and with the lettuce. And we're getting creative with it.
You start an idea and other people jump in and add to it. It's just wonderful to see these waves of imagination.
Yeah, and I didn't start this idea. It was our community development person, Rebecca, who got this brochure going for us, and it took a few years of planning, and then the postings were put out for a food security person, and I love growing things, and I love the nerdy hydroponic stuff, and I was really excited. Pretty happy that I came over to this direction.
There are several food security programs on the go right now. So you've got a freeze-dried concept that's catching on, you've got the community garden that's expanded, you're tending the orchard. Is there that big an interest in food security in Whitsett?
Yeah, our culture is deeply rooted in food. Our ski system, our collage system, it's all surrounded around food.
The reason I put in the orchard in the first place was that I could see they were losing their foraging grounds. You know, there's logging roads everywhere and stuff was drying out. And
yeah, the surrounding areas, we've got like cattle farming happening all over the place that fences off our moose habitat. So we're losing our moose, like, closer to the community. And in general, the moose population has declined. Our berries, with the droughts, sometimes we don't get huckleberries. So as an experiment, because huckleberries, I could see us having a few berry patches in the community at some point, using irrigation to keep them alive. Because it's too bad when we don't have our berries. So berries, huckberries, yeah. Actually, we're pretty lucky. Our area just grows Saskatoon's really, really nice. And during the years when the bears don't have a lot of food and we have a good Saskatoon, we're actually sharing our space here in Woodset with the black bears. They come in, they mow down on the berries. They don't get aggressive towards people as long as they're not being fed. And then they move on when they're done eating the berries. We're still a little nervous about it. We haven't had a problem with bears in the orchard, because it is fenced and the fruit gets eaten off of it. So it's not like we have a bunch of rotting fruit sitting around. But definitely they do attract the bears, because we have fruit trees in our yard and the bears come and tear our apple trees apart.
So what would you say are the benefits and challenges with all this fresh and prepared food in your community?
I mean, the benefits are pretty obvious, that we get to eat healthy food and we get the experience of growing it. And Dale, who is our communications person, put a logo together that is kind of our garden logo, and it's Let's Grow Together. And that has many meanings. It's like we're growing our food together, but we're also healing and growing as people together. So I think the challenges at first were just getting the word out, people knowing about it. I think it takes a lot of just word of mouth in our community, especially like a lot of people rely on social media and then they forget about word of mouth. And word of mouth is really important. Something that Evangeline talks to me a lot about, she says it's traditional to go out and invite people face to face to things too. That's how we invited to our feasts, and it's still, people really, that means a lot to people, to just like personally invite people to things. So not just making a post on Facebook or somewhere. That's also what's special about when we're all doing the gardening together, even when we have our feasts and stuff. That's what's special, is we're all getting together in person, and it's pretty cool.
It is very cool. Do you provide food for the feasts?
No, we don't, but I'm sure that could maybe be arranged at some point. But just because with produce, it's tricky. Like, that could be a possibility, but what we do is we have the fridge full during feasts, and if people decide they want to go grab some, then they can.
Right.
Just because then we're not handing something out that if you don't want to eat it, then it'll go to waste.
Right. So what do you hope will develop as a result of this? Like, what's your long-range goal for this?
It's not really my goal, but like when we did our food security plan, the food sovereignty plan, it's just to what I'm seeing, because we have many other people approaching me saying, we used to have a huge family garden on my property. We would like to develop that. So like possibly family gardens back in the community again. And I know, like, we don't just eat vegetables and stuff, we still eat our proteins, so we might see about getting into some livestock, some chickens, and stuff like that. Also, offering more workshops. We have a lot of amazing people who can share their traditional food knowledge with us, so doing that more often. A greenhouse. We're hoping to get a greenhouse that can grow through the winter. I mean, these are just ideas at this point, but maybe a greenhouse that could have some solar panels to feed the grid to then supplement our power supply, you know? So those are just kind of things that, a to-do list, I guess, of growing things slowly.
I think this is such a great example of becoming self-sufficient again. When COVID hit, everybody was panicked because there was nothing on the grocery shelves. And those of us who had gardens or who had deep connections with farmers in the area, we didn't have a problem with it because it was the way we were living. We didn't go to the Safeway dependent on their food supply.
Yeah.
And you have become very independent. You're not reliant on their food supply either. In fact, you're making sure that everybody in the community has their own food supply and that they're all working together.
We're working towards that, yeah. And something that also comes to mind, that other people in the community, because I'm just kind of collecting my community's ideas and taking their advice and rolling with it and trying to implement things slowly, is having a food hub where we buy bulk and people can come and, like, for certain staple items, come and buy those things at cost. So that wasn't my idea, but it's something I'd like to see happen. It's just infrastructure. It takes infrastructure to house like all these types of things. Those are things that we'll try to do over time. Even things like my Auntie Lucy brought up buying bulk canning lids and splitting it with people. Because a lot of people do have their jars, but you got to buy the lids every year.
Right.
So like buying those things in bulk and splitting it with people. So as a community together, yeah, just become more and more sovereign.
You are listening to Tempest in a Stockpot. I'm Christine Bruce.
And I'm Brenda Barrett.
I spent the first half of this episode inside Witsette's hydroponics building, learning how Andrew Gagnon, their food security coordinator, is strengthening the village's food system by offering access to fresh, locally grown fruit and vegetables, all while engaging the community at all ages. Angie is also revitalizing traditional food waste while being mindful of waste reduction and regenerative agricultural methods. Up next, a few clips from the tour Angie took me on to view the garden beds and the greenhouses that she's added to the edible forest. Angie is building food security in her remote community, and she's doing it in ways that spend kindness frivolously, not just on those whom she loves, but also on the vulnerable, on those she may not agree with, on the peculiar. Like the undeniable presence of the mountains, everyone in Witsette needs to eat, and so everyone is being allowed a role to play in the growing and harvesting of that very food. Okay, what's a wicking bed?
A wicking bed is you water from a pipe, it goes to the bottom of the bed, and then it wicks up to the plants. So it basically means you don't have to water very often. You just fill it up from the pipe here. You look in there.
Oh!
Keep that full, and then it waters
from
the bottom up. And this is all plastic, so it's like a contained unit here. These ones, iSpark gave us a grant to build these. And last year, a church group got a grant and built those with volunteers in our other garden.
And they're successful then?
Yes,
they grow in them.
They grow great. And the reason I put two of these here is because the elders gather here at the health center every Wednesday, and they have elders group, and we just wanted them to be close by for the elders to garden in these high beds where they don't have to bend down.
Yeah. Of course! And you've got your composter?
That used to be at the band office.
That's the same one,
years.
Is it?
Yeah. I moved it down here, and we actually use it now.
Remember when we were talking about worms?
Yeah, I actually have worms at home, and I got them a worm bin up at the elementary school.
Worm bins are fun. My God, look at all. They've used this land so well back here.
Yeah, this piece of garden outside of the fence was freshly created last year. My alfalfa came out and killed it. And we planted a whole slew of potatoes and sunflowers and corn in there last year. And the corn was, of course, experimental. We got tiny little corn like this, but it's still fun to plant. And we had a family came out with young kids and planted a row of potatoes. We just had our drain rock from our garden bed, so we made a little pathway here. We're going to run an irrigation line here and then run drip line down our rows this year because we want to try to conserve water. And we know that drip line is a good way of not wasting water.
Yes.
So we're going to try that. And then we're kind of going with a no-till garden here for the first time. Well, those are no-till, obviously. They're raised beds. But, yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to broad fork this from now on. And we're going to keep these as permanent rows.
Nice.
So this is a new style of gardening I haven't done before. But I've been researching it all winter and seeing Tea Creek's gardens. And
yeah, Tea Creek, eh?
Yeah. They gave us some of their drip line because they use new drip line every year, so they donated some of their drip line to us. Whew, rain's still coming down. And do you remember the greenhouse before? It got a renovation this year because it had pretty old plastic on it.
Look at your garlic! That stuff's almost ready to harvest, isn't it?
It's insane. It came up so early. It came up before Hazleton.
Mine certainly doesn't look like that yet.
I don't know what happened there, but it did really good. I think because I didn't mulch it very much in that warm weather we got,
yep,
it was able to heat up and really take off.
Okay.
Because I've been noticing that you don't need that much mulch on your garlic, and it does fine.
All right.
That's what I've just been doing, a little sprinkle of mulch. I don't go real thick.
Oh, I'm so happy. Look at the gooseberries and rhubarb. This is what I like, is to see fruit.
So we put asparagus in this year, and it's already coming up. Nice. Asparagus root.
Oh, that takes about 7 years, but oh, it's so good.
Well, we put the roots in, so we should get it in a couple of years. Yeah,
I can maybe see it next coming year. Up.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
So we're going to let it fern out this year. We're not going to pick any of it.
Okay.
And then next year we'll see how thick they are to see if we can harvest next year. But yeah.
Now, is that onions coming up there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those came up quick.
Yeah, they did.
We covered them because last year the crows kept pulling them out. So this greenhouse used to be, it had wood all the way around up to this point, all the way around. And I got a couple guys to renovate it. They took down the wood to a lower level. They took all the plastic off, and we had this nice plastic donated to us.
Oh, yeah.
So we used that. And then when we ran out, we just used some donated greenhouse plastic from PRT.
Okay. Well, yeah, this is much better, isn't it? You have good vision. Now, did you start all these from seeds?
Yeah, we had little workshops throughout the season, and people came out and helped with all the planting. Had dirt at the band office, and we got people to come out and plant everything.
What a lovely story.
And then they were also able to take some of the stuff home if they came out. Like, it was an open thing. Like, you can come out and you can plant for the garden, or you can plant for your, take some home. And
is it popular? Do people, lots of people come out to learn?
It's hit and miss. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The interest is like, because people have lots going on, right? So sometimes they're busy, they come out. Like last spring, we had a lot of people come out for our seed planting day. A lot of people. I was shocked. It was a beautiful sunny day. We were scorching out here. And yeah, we had lots of people. It was really awesome. This year, we haven't had a big crowd come out to the garden yet, but last night during our potato planting, we sure did. This actually was grown in the hydroponic farm, and it's an experiment. I started the seeds in the hydroponic farm in this walkway. These are cabbage. Bill Van Tunen's the one who cut the ground in our new potato farm over there, and he wanted me to plant lots of cabbage.
Oh, everything's doing so well in here. I'm so impressed.
Yeah.
Look at your sage. It's almost bolting. Holy.
You can take some sage home.
Oh, I've got one. Okay. Thank you. That's very kind of you. Yeah. That's very kind of you. Sage is such a healing plant. Yeah. I don't understand people not having a whole bunch of sage around their house. And cedar, and there's so much wonderful. Lavender.
Yeah. And this is culinary sage, so you can eat it. Throw it in your turkey. My next goal is to develop back here. But one thing at a time.
Yes.
I wanted to, this spring I was tempted to do this because I wanted to get cabbage back there. If you see how much stuff's growing back there, it's fertile land.
Oh, it's doing beautifully.
Yeah. And this used to be a swamp in the springtime. So it's got wetness about it, the earth down here, which is kind of nice.
Natural irrigation.
Yes, but what we did is we just threw a whole bunch of wood chips down. And now we don't have to walk in, like, deep water every spring.
Right.
It's just, there's some type of a, acts like a sponge or something.
That's very clever.
I didn't even know that was going to happen. But I just wanted to keep the weeds down.
Oh, look at this asparagus. Oh, the words.
William Dam Seeds is the good place to get these because their roots were beautiful. I bought off of West Coast Seeds before and they didn't really take like these ones.
Okay.
For the asparagus roots, that's what I've noticed.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, West Coast Seeds is amazing. They donate seeds to our garden every year and to Tea Creek. And then Tea Creek gave us a bunch of the seeds that they got. And lots of sharing happening between the Sycodec. We are closely, they are totally guiding and mentoring us. They teach us a lot. And they're kind of our inspiration, actually. Because they've got all their community members running all their gardens, and they're like a garden team out there. They're so incredible. Yeah, Velma is who we get connected with out there.
it's really nice just to be able to relate that the different communities are working together. Yeah. Not only that the community itself is working together, but that they work with various other communities too.
Yeah. No, Velma's, they're great out there for wanting to share and encourage the other communities in any way they can. It's so fun.
Okay, this...
Broccoli.
Oh, okay. All right.
A group of young kids came out and planted that during one of our... We have drop-ins. Because this is a locked area, we just have certain hours posted that people can come out and garden with us. And it's kind of nice because we can... It gives us an opportunity to prepare activities and different planting things for people.
How beautiful that you get the school over here and that they...
And last year, those trees got pruned.
They did, eh?
Yeah. So I think it's helped them a little bit.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
They look really healthy. Lots of blooms on them.
Yeah.
Now, a comment that somebody made yesterday on social media was, "I'm not seeing very many bees."
True. Yeah. We actually went to a bee workshop to learn how to do beekeeping and learned a bit about it. Yeah, I'm still thinking about that one because it's agriculture. Honeybees are not natural to our environment.
No, they're not.
So... They carry diseases and stuff too. So, yeah, I'm still thinking about that, and I feel like that might be more of a farm setting. Yeah, we do have a farm, so.
I have your reservations as well because I want to go back to the natural way of doing it so that we don't introduce other problems.
Even though, maybe it's too cold for the bees. I don't know. More than enough dandelions for the bees.
Yeah, it's not lack of food. So, what's happened with the bees here? Pollinators in general. I'm not seeing an awful lot of insects.
Yeah.
Looks like you've got lots of wood for future projects.
Yeah. Yeah, in the summertime, we might have a couple summer students and then we'll be able to build some things with this lumber. I have a vision of maybe doing something on this hillside so that pumpkins can vine out on the hillside.
Oh, I love watching squash grow on a hillside.
Yeah. So we'll see. I might just put some pumpkins in big pots for now, or maybe we'll dig a big pit hole and see. But we'll see.
What a great idea.
Looks like one of my lilac bushes is getting out-competed here.
This is so heartwarming to see the Sanjeev.
Their garden up there is beautiful, too. The Cayuguette maintenance team, they just built a beautiful greenhouse. My dad came out and volunteered to help with building terraces. With the machine they had, and they just look beautiful garden up there.
So now is that for the kids, to play in?
Yep, that's all there. They plant it, they take care of it. Me and my crew looked after the garden last summer, and then maybe we will this year again too, we'll see. But we'll have summer students, so I think it'll be guiding the summer students to look after it.
And then are they hoping that the kids will be able to do some harvesting
in
September?
They've had two harvest celebrations so far. As far as I've heard, they're planning their third harvest celebration next year as well. So, yeah, the fall time, education does all their traditional activities in August and September. And that'll be their harvest celebration will be incorporated around that time. Actually, they've been doing it in October, beginning of October. So they take food from their garden and they make the students make the food and they have a big feast and celebrate and share pictures. And it's a really neat event that they're doing out there. Yeah, no, the kids picked that apple tree clean last year. And the sour cherries are an interesting one because people either love them or hate them.
Right.
They're so sour. Yeah. And I love them.
They make a great pie. Yeah, I was so excited about things like the gooseberries to see what would happen with them. And the raspberries.
Those are growing nicely. Even though I don't look after them, they just kind of do their own thing.
I'm really glad.
Yeah.
That's what you really want is just for them to look after them. I don't want a high-maintenance food.
Yeah, like all this stuff is high-maintenance, but it's fun and it's therapeutic just being in the garden. And it's so nice when people come out and we just visit and we chat and sometimes people come and they're like, I wasn't feeling very good when I came here, but I just got here and I feel better.
Yeah.
So it's fun.
It's good that you're behind the health center because that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah.
And I love that you've put in raised beds for the elders because that means you've been thinking about everyone in your community, not just one specific group.
Well, I guess we're still lucky in the sense that we don't starve if we have a crop failure. Like we can still go to the grocery stores and stuff, but
you've put in a variety of food, so
Yeah, that's true. When we have a variety, we've got like, okay, these didn't do so well this year. Let's learn from that. Or it was just not the year for those things.
Mm-hmm.
Like some years, your beets do poorly or your cabbage does poorly. And then we just don't get too depressed about it. Just be like, okay, it was a bad year for that. So,
yep.
And a young girl who was volunteering in the potato patch last night was like, I want strawberries planted over there. And I was like, awesome. Yeah, let's do it. And now she's like, got it all planned out. We're going to put strawberries over there. So we're putting strawberries in. And yeah.
That's what you want, is that kind of enthusiasm for what's happening here, right? People coming up with their own ideas and following through on it.
Wow. So this was donated wood chips from Seton. My uncle came and picked them up for us, donated his time to be back for us with his dump trailer. Little things like that make a big difference when we get all these. People want to support the community garden. We've got people saying they want to come out and volunteer. The three nurseries give us free plastic for our greenhouse.
But that's how you're working, not around the capitalist model, but instead of the capitalist model, is community trades and of time and resources. And
eventually, if someone wanted to trade eggs for our greens, we might. I'd love to do that.
Well, you know, that was one of my dreams. So I had literally set up a Wadzinkle grant proposal.
Oh, cool.
And I was going to start a little chicken shed.
Yeah.
But Diane talked me out of it. She said, I don't think the community's ready for that. And she was probably right.
Yep.
But that was one of my long-range goals.
People are asking for it now.
Are they?
Yeah. So that might come to fruition. I think Rob Zilder's working on that with education. We just have the unpredictability of the wildlife and the dogs and different things.
Right.
So we'll have to just make sure we have a very good space for it.
Yeah.
We can't let ourselves be defeated before we start, even though I'm all... Because we had rabbits that got killed at school, so...
Oh, really?
So we're dealing with a little bit of fear around that. The poor kids had loved these bunnies so much.
Of course. I know that the salmon stocks are drying up.
Yeah.
And so you may not, as a people, be able to rely on that much longer.
Yeah, that's very, very.
And you said the moose's numbers are fewer. So I think it does make sense to put other things in place.
Yeah.
Because our focus in this episode was inclusion, Brenda and I agreed that we should air a couple of the meaningful tributes we heard this summer after one of our farmers, Leslie Jackson, died. Leslie's business, Lauriston Farm, produced chicken, eggs, and a variety of vegetables and herbs, offering these products at the Bulkley Valley Farmers Market each week. But Leslie wasn't ever just a farmer, as invaluable as that role is. Leslie was on the Farmers Market Board of Directors for years. At home, a stunning number of young agrarians, woofers, workaways, and locals stayed, worked, and learned alongside her on the farm. Leslie had quite an impact on people around food. She also had an uncanny ability to both see people for who they were and to save them from falling through bureaucratic cracks in discouraging times. Like the mountains on which we live, Leslie was reliable, steady, and comforting. And just like our mountains, she had a subtle impact on those around her as an impressive model of inclusion. And so, it seems fitting to dedicate this episode to Leslie Jackson, our friend. The following is from our conversation with Jolene Swain.
It's funny, us talking about building community, we just, as you probably know, lost Leslie Jackson. And one of the things I valued the most about her was her ability to accept anybody.
Yeah.
There were so many odd characters in her friendship circle. Odd people. And we'd sit over our coffee for an evening, or we'd have a glass of wine, and we would talk about the peculiarities of different... I'm sure she would talk to other people about my peculiarities, but it was always, you know, the strength of it and why we need to keep that and the value that it brings. And we've lost an incredible human being there, because mm-hmm. she could accept mm-hmm. such diversity of people.
Yeah.
And make them all feel valued and acknowledged. And I mean, I'm not good at that at all. And so we've lost that.
Yeah. Yeah. She had a really great presence at the market. And, you know, seeing the number of farmers that went through working with her on her land, I don't even know where they came from. But she just somehow created an open space to bring people into the food system and get their feet on the ground and get some experience and or try it out. And I just...
She gave him such confidence.
Yeah, and she was just such a core presence at the market. So her sudden absence has definitely created this void and realization of what a subtle role she was playing in our food system all these years. Yeah, it was really saddened to hear that news. And, you know, it's been over 5 years since we've been at the markets, but she was always there and she was always easy to talk to and happy to share and always learning too. Like never came across as having all the answers, but happy to share what she knew. It's a big loss for the region.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
And as I was scrolling through Facebook one day, I found this tribute on the Groundbreakers Facebook page. Leslie Jackson was a passionate supporter of Groundbreakers and played an integral role as one of our partner producers in the Youth on Farms program. Her dedication, warmth, and contributions to our agricultural community left a lasting impact on everyone she worked with. This podcast was generously funded by the Public Health Association of BC. Brenda Barrett is my co-lead and the executive director of the Storytellers Society in Hazleton. Technical production by me, Christine Bruce. Music by Elijah Larson. Our food expert today was Angie Gagnon, food security coordinator in Woodset. Angie's message is unassuming. Like the tiny, remote village of Woodset, you could easily miss it traveling through these imposing mountains. This summer, as I visited with other farmers and producers in northern BC, I was reminded repeatedly of Angie and her work, of how the Gitxsans struggled for survival in residential school. And yet, as I learned from my conversation with Dr. Ian Mosby and in Tyler McCreary's writings, the Gitxsan in Sikkadaq are helping shape today's eating habits with their own hydroponics unit and an acreage of planted vegetables. When I visited Tea Creek Farm and heard of their challenges to obtain funding, yet Jacob and Jessica persevere and are training up Indigenous farmers so they can feed their own communities. All of these small northern BC communities are quietly building collaborations and have each become food secure. For more information on this or any other episode of Tempest in a Stockpot, visit storytellerssociety.org/tempest. Thank you for sharing this meal with us. I'm Christine Bruce, reminding you that if you want it done fast, do it alone. But if you want it done well, do it together.